Hello. Welcome to Pressure Drop, the program about the business of weather. Good morning. My name's Ian Harper. I'm speaking to you from the International Conference on Energy Meteorology here in Bari, Italy. Today, I'm speaking to Vera Silva, Alberto Troccoli, and Charlie Smith. And I'll just hand you over to them.
Hello, I'm Vera Silva. I work for EDF Research and Development in France, and I am the Research Program Director for Electricity Systems and Markets.
Hi, I'm Charlie Smith with the Utility Variable Generation Integration Group in the U.S. I serve as the Executive Director. We're an association consisting of a cross-section of utilities, project developers, consultants, forecasters, government organizations, and some universities. We work on identifying and resolving issues associated with putting a lot of wind and solar on the system.
Hello, I am Alberto Troccoli. I'm based at the University of East Anglia. And I also direct the World Energy and Meteorology Council.
Right, thank you. Today I'm going to be asking some questions about the energy mix. What role does energy meteorology play in changing or maintaining the energy mix? Let's start with you, Alberto. You're the organizer behind the conference. Tell us, what role can energy meteorology play in the energy mix?
Historically, the meteorology has played a major role in energy, in for example, forecasting what can happen in the sea for offshore operations for oil and gas. But more recently, of course, the focus has shifted towards wind and solar, and starting from the resource estimation. So you look at what happens in the past in order to be able to get the best estimate of the production of a solar or wind farm, and also in terms of forecasting, because once the farms are built, you need to operate them and you need to integrate them well within the network.
Vera, what do you think? You work for EDF, big French energy utility. What is energy meteorology doing for EDF?
It's really a very important part of the business, both of the EDF business in France and abroad. And what we can see is that historically, EDF has had quite important concerns on meteorology and the impact on the energy because of the operation of the large nuclear power plants and the dependence on the temperature of the water in rivers and as well as the hydro generation. And more recently, with the increase of renewables in the mix, it gained an even bigger importance, because what we have been observing is that there's only one thing which is we can have for sure in the future energy mix, is that it's going to depend a lot on the weather. And that is the certainty we have at the moment.
What about you, Charlie? What is energy meteorology playing? What role is it playing in the energy mix? Is it shifting the balance of energy power generation?
Building on what Alberto and Vera said, we just finished our forecasting workshop in Atlanta last week for UVIG, and this was the focus, certainly, of the workshop. And it was very obvious that energy and meteorology are coming closer together with the fact, really, that renewables are now mainstream, and the output of wind power plants, solar power plants, hydropower plants all depend directly on the weather, which meteorology is all about. And as Vera mentioned, the cooling water for thermal power plants, operating point of the plants depends upon the temperature of the cooling water. And the load is also very much a function of the temperature. And one of the themes that was echoed consistently is that meteorology is a critical part of the future of the energy infrastructure, and we really need to move towards an integrated meteorology view of the power system and an integrated forecast that includes all forms of generation and load.
An integrated view of meteorology in the power system, Alberto. What does that mean?
This means considering the various components of the energy system. So in looking at how, for example, wind, solar, hydro, and all the other supplies of energy balance each other regardless of weather conditions. Of course, they're driven by weather conditions, but you need to be able to provide enough power to meet the demand at any one time. And so it's important to learn how the weather systems actually drive these changes. And the interesting thing is actually that from a meteorological point of view, all these aspects are contained within the models, the atmospheric models that produce these variables. So from a meteorological point of view, it's already integrated because it's you get all the output you need from essentially a single model, more than one model if you can, but a model will give you the precipitation, will give you the temperature, the wind, the solar radiation, all from the same output. So the integration in that sense is done, and so the interesting part is now how we translate that information into the energy component to make the connection between the various supply in the energy side to match what is coming from the meteorological side.
Right. Some people might say that energy meteorology is really coming into its own with renewables, but is that the case? Does energy meteorology favour any one type of power generation over another? Does it have more advantages for one over another? What do you think, Vera?
I think it clearly has advantages for all sorts of, in the case of electricity generation, of all the types of generation that are very dependent on weather. I would say that the dependency depends also, is linked to the lead time. So I think when we're looking, which is for us quite an important topic, which is the impact of climate change on these weather variables, this actually affects all sorts of electricity generation sources because they all depend in some way into, as I mentioned, the temperature of water, water availability, or the extremes we can have in terms of heat or cold waves that will then affect the demand. When we're coming close to real time and being capable of forecasting within 2-3 days the day ahead and intraday, then I think it becomes really important for renewables as well as for demand and to a lesser extent to hydro generation. But in it's difficult to say that having better forecasts will favor one specific type of energy. I think it will favor the electricity system and the ability to integrate these new type of sources. But as a whole system vision, I think it helps every type of component of the system.
What do you think, Charlie? Does it favor one particular source of power generation?
I wouldn't say that it favors one or another, but I would say that it is more critical to the renewable forms of generation, to the wind, the solar, and the hydro. They depend critically on it, whereas because the weather is really the fuel source for those forms of generation, whereas for the thermal generation or the nuclear generation, it has its own fuel source that's not weather-dependent, so it's not so critically dependent on the weather forecast as the renewable generation is.
We've so far focused in on power generation, but what about transmission of power and the efficiency of power usage? Where does energy meteorology fit in with power transmission, Alberto?
It actually fits in different ways, and you can go from one extreme to the other. For example, if you're in Nordic countries, transmission lines are affected by icing, and so there's a lot of effort to understand, you know, when icing occurs, because of course they then have a lot of weight on ice has a lot of weight on the lines, and therefore there's a problem there. Similarly, or in the opposite way, when it's too hot, then there is a problem with transmission because the capacity to transmit currents then changes a lot with temperature, and so you need to watch that you don't go over certain thresholds in transmitting power. And that's where, you know, there's a lot of effort there as well to try to understand locally how the temperature is changing and try to rate the line according to the weather conditions. So you can change the amount of current that goes through a process called dynamic line rating, and so there's also a lot of effort in modelling the meteorology around this transmission line.
Is this why power grids in Australia and the United States, which are notoriously out of date, some of them anyway, are associated with bushfires or forest fires starting up because of too much power is going through at a high temperature line? Sparking.
Yeah. I mean, that could be the case. Maybe Vera or Charlie can respond to that more. But I know, for example, there is a case. The utility in San Diego now is in charge of predicting their own weather because of impacts the infrastructure can have on human lives, and so they would be liable if anything happened. And that's why they install their own weather model and do their own forecast to predict any major event that can have such catastrophic impacts.
What about an EDF era? Transmission must be crucial to EDF.
As part of EDF, the transmission part is actually a separate company. So from EDF generation perspective, the access to transmission is quite crucial, because that's how we can actually shift the electricity. But it's more something we see as an output. From EDF perspective, from the operation of the distribution grid, which is quite essential in a high renewables mix because a lot of the renewable generation will be connected to distribution, there are two aspects which are becoming very important, and I can see that in the research. One of the issues is about forecasting the big storms and extreme weather conditions that could actually lead to losses of quite important parts of the grid and difficulty to bring power back on, and that is a responsibility of the distribution system operator across France. And the second thing is that we've been able to use more and more local forecasting in both in terms of demand, wind and PV, in order to operate the grid in a much more intelligent way and extract a lot more capacity from the grid. So I would say that forecasting is actually becoming one of the crucial components of what we call the smart grid, and that is seen at all the levels of the grid, including distribution.
Charlie, what do you think? Is energy meteorology, is it having a key role in the transmission infrastructure?
I think transmission is a great example, and I think the examples that Alberto and Vera gave are very good ones. Just building on Alberto's comment about San Diego, we went through a very severe drought in the West for the last 5 years, just came out of it this winter with heavy rains. But last summer, because of the drought, there were some wildfires in the San Diego service territory that swept underneath 500 kV transmission lines that were bringing remote generation into the city, and two of those 500 kV lines went out of service during the fire from all the smoke and the arcing faults that interrupted the lines. So that was a very critical and very good example of the importance of understanding the relationship between transmission and meteorology. Also, the use of uncertainty information in the forecast. That's an area we haven't talked about much. It's an area that hasn't gotten a lot of visibility in the operations end. But with the real-time ratings, if you look at the congestion problems where there's too much power available and not enough capacity to move it where it wants to go and you have to reduce the power, the real-time rating issue is a very important one. And if you look at a deterministic projection of what the output will be on that line due to the wind or the solar generation that's driving the line, you can have a situation where you think that you're okay from a line rating point of view, but actually because of the probabilistic nature of the forecast and the uncertainty around it, you could be, the line flow could be above the rating and you could be in trouble without realizing it until it actually happens. So it's nice not only to understand the relationships, but to look at the uncertainty bands in the forecasts. But the really big example, I think, where transmission and meteorology come together is when you look at a long-range expansion of the system. And we're now beginning to look in the long-range planning cycle at what we call co-optimization of the generation expansion and the transmission, which means that you optimize them together subject to meteorology constraints. Meteorology both with regards to resource assessment and with regards to the real-time operations. So you look at where the really good renewable resources are, you look at the cost of building those resources and the cost of building transmission to move them at the same time, and then look at the operation for 87, 60 hours a year, And by co-optimizing, you find the lowest cost solution to the long-term system evolution that takes into account both the cost of the generation, the transmission, and the operations. That's I would say, an emerging area. It's not mainstream yet.
Fascinating, fascinating. Now, the other side of the energy mix, so to speak, is how much energy do we need in that mix? Can we actually reduce the requirement for energy by using or placing greater emphasis on energy efficiency? Can energy meteorology improve the use of energy or reduce the use of energy, and increase energy efficiency? Vera.
Oh, thanks. You didn't send me that one before. I think talking about energy efficiency, I go back to what I mentioned before, which is with the choice that is made in terms of how we're going to do space or heating or water heating or even industrial process heating, it depends quite a lot on temperature, it depends on humidity, on wind, and therefore somehow it depends on meteorology. If we have better information, better understanding of this type of variables, it is possible to deploy what I would say some measures from a utility perspective, from a retailer perspective, to help the users to have a more efficient utilization of their electricity or even the energy in general without losing comfort levels. So I think sometimes there is a certain, one of the limitations on energy efficiency can see the fear of the consumer to lose comfort, and I think a better understanding of the meteorologic effects, which are the reason why we need that comfort, could certainly help to have much more effective energy efficiency measures.
What do you think about this, Charlie?
I think as time goes on and we get more renewables on the system, I think that it's going to be very critical to have demand response participate in the balancing of the system, or load management, as it's been called in the past. And I think that it's going to be necessary to have some maybe seasonally dependent and weather-dependent loads which don't operate all the time. Maybe they only operate when the weather conditions are right. I don't know what those loads are yet, but I think there's a real need for the long term to investigate how demand response can participate in balancing the system and how we can develop some loads which are seasonally adjustable, will be dependent upon the weather during those seasons, and can help to make use of the very large volumes of renewable energy which may be available during low load periods and might otherwise be wasted if we can't find some way of making use of them.
You mean like turning off people's aircon units?
No, I'm thinking of something that's, that would be one, yes, but I'm thinking of something that we may not even have thought of yet that would be, may require more investment, may not require investment, maybe some kind of a manufacturing process that's temperature and seasonally dependent that could be turned on and off, that wouldn't operate, you know, year-round, but would only operate when the weather conditions were right, mm-hmm. and the availability of cheap renewable energy was there, and favorable weather conditions.
Right, only do your washing during the day. Alberto, what's your thinking on this?
Yeah, I think there's a lot that can be done in terms of increasing the efficiency of the system, and obviously demand is one area where we know that it's controlled in several ways by weather parameters. The main one is temperature, and but often, buildings, for example, don't respond too well to weather parameters first because, you know, it's very difficult to get the local information, so that we need to get that also increase in accuracy of modeling the weather at the very local scale. But we're getting there because there are now, you know, very high resolution weather models that can push the resolution to 100 meters or more. And that modeling what happens at the city level. And so when we get to that level, we can even go down to buildings and then send that information to people that manage the buildings particularly and control the air conditioning units and so on. So they respond and anticipate what the changes instead of leaving the air con, because obviously there is an inertia in the system. Once you cool the system, you know, it stays cool for a while. But if you know that in the next few hours you won't need air conditioning, you can start to switch it off and so on. So there are many measures like this that can be taken in order to improve efficiency.
To conclude, I'd just like to ask one more question. 60% or nearly 60% of the world's population now live in cities. This is opening up another field called urban meteorology, which must be intimately connected to energy meteorology, because these people are probably using more power. What are the implications of this urbanization for energy meteorology, for the energy sector? What does it mean in terms of power generation, power usage? Vera?
One of the things which are quite challenging about the megacities and the energy integration of the megacities is actually the ability to supply them, because some of the solutions we have in terms, for example, of renewable generation, like wind and other resources, they are not going to be in the cities. So that's one of the challenges. It's about how to supply these cities, how to provide them a continuity of supply, because electricity will be tightly linked with the security and the quality of life in the city. How can we provide them with this continuity of supply? And this is actually something which I think where weather forecasting will be essential, because you will need to plan the infrastructure. You need to be able to operate and try to maximize the utilization of renewables if you want to do a low carbon cities. And that's where I think meteorology will play an essential goal, is on that, because if we decarbonize a lot of things but then we have high carbon mega cities, the overall benefit becomes quite small. So I think low carbon cities, it's one of the things with meteorology can play quite an important role.
Do you have a view on this, John?
The thing that comes to mind is heat islands. You know, I lived in New York City for a while, a long time ago, and I think that there may be some new information that we need to learn about the interaction of weather with heat islands. Because if you're dissipating enough heat, you know, the heat island is absorbing energy and releasing it as heat, I think that you're going to start to have an impact on the local environment. And I don't really know if anybody's looked at how that interaction between that point source dissipation of heat and the weather in the immediate area are going to affect each other. But I suspect that there is some effect there, and it may make it more difficult to dissipate the heat in the appliances in the heat island. Things may heat up higher. You may require more air conditioning for a given weather forecast temperature, because it's just hotter in the heat island. But I think we have some things to learn there. I think it's a bit of an unknown, and I think it's going to change the way we do. It'll be a departure from the way we do things now.
What do you think, Alberto? Is there a linkage between urbanization and energy meteorology?
Yeah, certainly. And just to continue, I guess, on the thought that Charlie has on the heat island, there are some people researching now how different configurations of cities actually respond to climate more than weather. I mean, the weather is too short timescale, but on the climate timescale, people are experimenting with what happens if you cover all the rooftops with vegetation, for example. And so there's a lot of innovative ideas that can come out of these studies. Also using a lot of photovoltaic for windows and changing quite a lot of the configuration of how cities look like. Of course, this cannot be done in retrofitting easily, because it would cost a lot. But if you are, building new builds, you can look at all these measures to reduce also the albedo, or increase, depending on where, what kind of effects you're looking for. And so you can play with different architectural shapes and different cover for housings and so on. So it's in Princeton, for example, there is a group that is focusing on this kind of modeling at very high resolution, but there are several others. So just to say that there are already people, focusing on the research side in this area.
Well, thank you very much. We'll leave it there.